Time of the Historics, good morning to you, wherever you find yourself this time. Excuse me. Good morning, welcome to Realm of the Historics. And today's today, fasten your seatbelt because we are going higher. And if you're just tuning in, my name is Francis Nengela, the only reliable kinetic energy in town. Just stay tuned. We are here. And when we are here, it means we are here. And today is today. So, that is of course Kajanine. I'll find her later. Today we are looking at, we are looking at polygamy once again. And we want to find out, is polygamy a cultural thing, an African thing, or is it an individualistic choice? Because most people who are pro or anti-polygamist or the pro and or anti-polygamy have one reason or the other, to justify their standpoint. And mostly the arguments thereof have historical, implications. As to say, who started polygamy? Where do we have a first case of polygamy? And most people think, most of us say polygamy is our culture. Polygamy is our culture. But we have well established traditional authorities which have laws, or let me say customary laws. But in these customary laws, you will never find a law on polygamy. You will never find a law exclusively, you know, stipulated for polygamy. Now, that shows to you that polygamy is not governed by traditional norms and customs. Because we only have, you know, customary laws that are with regards to marriage. When you take a girl and you have to pay lobola. That's, you know, kind of pluralistic approach. From a singular girl point of view and a singular man. And of course, when you marry another girl, you still have to pay lobola for her because you are marrying her. But that does not culminate into polygamy as, you know, as a clause in our oral traditional laws. But pro polygamists will say, no, it is because polygamy was to, you know, for economic reasons. You know, people needed to work, so you needed to have a lot of people to work in the field. Well, that theory has a problem. Because you will find people that are rich, even that in the traditional setup, that are very rich, but they are not polygamists. And you will find a poor person, a poor man who is a polygamist or who is in polygamy. So again, polygamy seems not to come to solve, you know, economic issues, or it seems not to come for economic reasons. And most people that argue in favor of polygamy are mostly men. So we are coming to it to investigate. And don't forget that you can call in if you are listening. You can call in if you are listening. Now, we also have feminists that have a different approach and a different, you know, understanding as far as, you know, polygamy is concerned. They have a different viewpoint. Then you have a, you know, you have the church also that have a different standpoint. So we are going to look at all those. So now we start with a pro polygamist, because they say it's for economic reasons. It's not necessarily to say it's for love. And if then people don't marry for love, and it's for economic reasons, we might have a problem. We might have a problem. If people don't marry for love, but just for economic reasons. We also need to face the reality here that there is only one thing that brings a man and a woman together. There is just that one component. Remove that component. You will see that a man will not need a woman and a woman will not need a man. At least to such a larger extent. of living together as companions. We might need each other as colleagues, maybe, but not as, you know, not in a platonic or romantic, you know, affairs. So some people say, okay, men are fewer than women. So if people are not getting, if men are not allowed to marry two wives, who is going to marry the rest of the women? Well, that could be a concern, but that concern, we need to look at it very well, because polygamy was not established to solve demographic imbalance. And in fact, when polygamy was formed, there were no demographic imbalance. And it is not everywhere where you will have some demographic imbalance. So polygamy was not formed to solve a demographic imbalance. There is only one reason why you would want to marry two women, and we'll go to it, you know, we'll go to it. Now, we also need to know that polygamy is not a cultural thing. It's not a cultural problem. And in fact, the traditional authority does not dictate how many wives you should marry. There is no law like that in a traditional authority. So if we say it's a cultural thing, or a traditional thing, we are telling ourselves that the traditional authority have power over how we get married and whom we get married to. Which will be a problem, because marriage has always been an individual choice. And it has always been governed by society. And in society, because of the connotation that comes with it, or the connotation that comes with being single, people are forced to get into relationship just to kill that stigma. But if that stigma is lifted, some people will choose to stay without getting married. But because of that societal stigma, and in fact the connotation that comes, you know, with being single, it always has a bad echo that you are single. And there is a name for being single, and that name does not echo well. Now, whether it is in church, whether it is in the traditional setup, whether it is in this modern society, when you are a single person, you don't have anyone, there's a way they will look at you. And this will force you to attempt to have somebody or to get into a relationship. So because of the societal, because society expects you to grow. And when you are grown, there must be somebody in your life. And then you get married, and then you don't have children. Another echo, you know, another bad sound, or another bad sound will be echoing around you. That till now, no child. They've been married for 10 years, but till now, no child. So you'll be forced to go out and try with somebody else. Maybe your partner is the one that, excuse me. Maybe your partner is the one that has a problem. Just to discover that you are the one that has a problem. And that will not sit well with you. And of course, to solve that problem, in nowadays we have what we call the assistive reproductive technology, where you will have, you know, artificial insemination and so forth. And you have, you know, surrogacy, where somebody carries your baby and gives birth to you, to the baby, and give the baby to you. So the couple can agree that, okay, we will have somebody and we can just inseminate her. She will carry our child, and then she will give our child, she will give us our child, our son. Okay. So it seems that, you know, polygamy started as an individual choice. One person decided he was going to marry two wives. And then other people started following suit and doing the same, until it became a norm to a certain extent. But even if it became a norm or common, it's not a customary norm. You know, it's not under customary law. It is just a norm that is accepted by society. So polygamy was a norm that was just accepted by society, but it's not part of customary law. It's not part of cultural, you know, way of life. Let me qualify my statement. It's a commonly accepted norm. You know, it's a norm. That's why you have cultural norms, but they are not customary, which means it's not a law that any traditional authority will have power to reinforce or to enforce, but it is a norm that we, all of us, have accepted, and even some of us were born, you know, through that establishment. I was born in a polygamous, marriage myself. So I can tell it to you from A to Z. I know the pros and cons of polygamy. I know the pros and cons of polygamy. So I'm not talking about something from research. I'm talking about something from experience. And you see, our problem in a traditional and religious, environment is that we do not come out openly. You see, we embrace, even if something is wrong, we embrace it because we like it or we love it. And we condemn something because we hate it, not necessarily because it is wrong. We just condemn it because we hate it and we don't like it. That is how we are. And from the from traditional and from religious standpoints, we have that one thing in common. I'll also put it from the political and so-called human rights activism point of view. We have that same hypocrisy. Now, which means polygamy is a norm.
From sunrise to supper time, Namib Mills is there, feeding the nation with care, quality, and heart.
We believe food is more than nourishment. It's dignity. It's hope. It's the start of a better tomorrow.
Through sustainable production processes, job creation, and affordable, nutritious food, Namib Mills is driving economic growth one plate at a time. Because when we say feeding the nation,
we mean uplifting lives,
empowering communities, and building a future where no one is left behind.
Namib Mills, proudly Namibian, passionately feeding the nation.
Namib Mills, feeding the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How is your Saturday doing wherever you're finding yourself this evening? Or it's still yet actually getting evening. Welcome to Life Lessons right here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. I'm your host, Ndafa. Happy Jujun as usual. I'm here to keep you company on this wonderful Saturday. And yes, we still have an interesting topic.
You can tune in to Namib.
Welcome to Life Lessons right here on Eagle FM. So now today we're talking a very interesting topic, and not just interesting,
right,
but
good morning to you. We are coming live to you from the capital of Windhoek, and my name is Wanda, and you are listening to Eagle FM.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Simon, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
All right, sorry for that. That's technical issue. Technical information thing. Now, we are saying polygamy is a norm that is accepted in societies, not only African societies, but it was accepted in societies. But it was not a cultural customary law, which means it was not culturally binding. Because a customary law is culturally binding. For example, you have to pay lobola when you are getting married. That is binding. You have to pay tax to the traditional authority. That's customary law. It's binding. You know? When you don't just You don't just create clear land. You have to report yourself to the headman, and then the headman reports to you, to the chief headman until it goes to the main traditional court. And then you are granted the right to clear that land and make it yours. That is legally, traditionally, culturally binding. But polygamy is not culturally binding, which means it's not part of the cultural customary law. It's not part of the traditional, customary law. It is part of societal norm. It is part of a societal norm. Now, most of us that argue to say, white people came to Africa and tell us to marry one wife, and stripped us of our rights to marry two women, we are historically, factually wrong. We are factually and historically wrong because polygamy did not start in Africa. In fact, polygamy started before Africa was born. And in fact, polygamy was never started by an African man. That is now historically. So, this brings us to the fact that societies has always coexisted. And you will find people that had two wives all over. And you will find some people that had one wife. For example, Isaac had one wife. He only had Rebecca. So, for example, Aaron had only one wife. Joshua, Joseph. There are many, in biblical history that only had one wife. But there are also many in biblical history that had two wives. Like David had two wives. My goodness. Jacob had Leah and Rachel. And also, he had Leah's maid and Rachel's maid. Those were his wives. He had four wives. David, we don't even know how many wives he had. And we don't even know how many concubines he had. Now, here is where it is binding. A wife is somebody that you pay lobola, that you go and officially and take them. And you pay lobola. A concubine is somebody that you don't pay lobola, but you are in a relationship with them. So it's cohabitation. That's why they are called concubines. There's no legally binding, there's no, the relationship between you and that person is not binding. That's why a customary law comes to say, if you take somebody without the approval of the parents of the person and your parent or your parents, and you stay together, you are cohabitating. So, and it is called stay together. In Oshiwambo, we call it Okwoteka. In Silozi, we call it Mapoto. So, those are not good words. And no girl, no woman will be proud to even openly say, we are in Oshoteka, or in Mapoto, or stay together, or Samlieve, the one they call it in Afrikaans. I don't know whether I'm pronouncing it very well. Pardon me there. So it's not something that one can be proud of. Now, in a polygamous situation, there are also names that some women are given that no woman will be proud of. Like in Oshwamba, there are two words, Wokehaka and Totende. Those are women that are brought in. You know, Totende and Wokehaka, these are words that are not honoring. They are kind of, you know, if you have to interpret it like you are not, you see, how can I even put it? If it was we can call it maybe a spare wheel. You know, or maybe, you know, it's just not a good name. You know, it doesn't present a good picture. And you see, no woman would, or Oshwamba woman would publicly come and tell you that they want to be called those names. So I'm not shunning polygamy, I'm just putting the realities of polygamy that we don't talk about. I'm just giving you the realities of polygamy. We don't talk about these things. And something that is legally binding from a traditional law point of view is something that is moralistically, you know, proven to be ethically correct. But a norm that is acceptable is something that is morally incorrect, you know, but it does not harm society. You know, it is not harmful to society. So it can be allowed. I want to draw you to homosexuality, for example. In the Baganda kingdom, there was a king, the king of the Baganda people, who had small boys that he used to sodomize. I'll put it that way, straight. And it was accepted as a norm because the king does it. And most people want to say, no, homosexuality has been there. So they accepted it because the king is the one that was at the forefront of practicing it with small boys, which today we will say it was rape. But it was accepted that time as a norm because maybe the king was too powerful to be confronted by anyone, or society was reluctant to confront it. But it was ethically and culturally, it was traditionally immoral. It was traditionally immoral. And homosexuality is not just in African, societal culture that was deemed to be ethically immoral. It was immoral everywhere. Including kingdoms such as England. You know? It was immoral. Even during the 1960s, there were laws in Europe against homosexuality. Certain of those laws started to be changed near in the 1970s. And in the 1980s, when we started to hear about HIV/AIDS, we used to hear that it's a disease affecting homosexuals. So those are, I'm just drawing you to the facts. And like I said, you can call. The lines are open. And I always used to say, emotions are aside and we talk, because we talk reality here. So, we understand from history how things, you know, came about. It is not a human rights issue. We should also look at it from a moral and, you know, historical issue. Point of view. Now, we also know that wherever you go, whether it is Russia, China, North Korea, wherever, you will find people that are marrying two wives. It has been a norm. And in fact, in some other cultures, you see that women are also married by two men. It is called polyandry. Now, somebody asked a question that, okay, if we want polygamy to be legalized, should we also legalize polyandry? And you see that most men will say no. A woman cannot be married by two men. But why? Because she wants to be married by two men. And the argument will be like, women are not like men. So women are not like men. Some arguments would be correct, practically. But we are living in a world where things should no longer be correct, morally. We are living in a world where, you know, things should be correct from a human right point of view. You know, things should be constitutionally correct. We are no longer living in a world of ethics and morals. The ethics and morals are being replaced with human rights. The person has the right to be married by two men. Just like somebody woke up the one morning, he's 50 years old, and he wanted to go to the kinder because he feels that he's a toddler. He feels that he's a toddler. He's 2 years old. According to him, this is his right. That's what he's feeling. So in this world, you are supposed to go by what you feel. It's your right. We are no longer going to live in a moralistic and ethical, you know, way of life, where you should be correct morally for you to do something. No, as long as you feel that you want to be a chair, you can be a chair. And somebody, in fact, you can be a talking chair. In the office, somebody comes in and says, there's no chair. You can say, come and sit on me, because I'm a chair. And from a human right point of view, you are correct. That's what you feel. You are a chair, so somebody must sit on you. And if that person refuses to sit on you, then that person is discriminating, you know, against you. It's having discrimination. They are not inclusive. You know? Because you are a chair, you are supposed to be seated on. And somebody is refusing to sit on you because he sees you as a human being, not as a chair. From a moral standpoint, it would be wrong for him to sit on you. Unless for other reasons. Maybe for romantic reasons. But under normal circumstances, a person wants to sit on a chair because it's morally correct. I can sit on this chair for as long as I want. In fact, I'll be sitting on this chair for two hours now. I'll be sitting on this chair. But somebody, from a human right point of view, the person will wake up, well, don't call me your mother anymore. I'm a toddler. Huh? Yes. Tomorrow, you guys must drop me at the kindergarten. That's what they feel. So, that from a human right point of view, there's no wrong, there's no right, there's no right. As far as your feelings are concerned, well, they say as long as your feelings are not, you know, interfering with other people's rights, but you see, some people's feelings and choices of whatever they want to become is now forced on everyone. And to a certain extent, you will be forced to become that for you to get a job. We are going there. So, there is no boundary. As long as it is you that feels, if you feel that you want to walk, you are tired of walking with your, on, you know, you are tired standing on your feet, you want to stand on your head, it's your right. So this is the type of world that we are living in. It's no longer a world governed by morality or moral standards. It's a world that is governed by human rights. Let's go for a short musical break. Before you say, what did this guy drink? Well, I just went to drink water. So let's go for a short musical break. We'll be right back.
Dunia Give me your attention, Zikulongwe Lori Ali. will succeed. Yamweta picho muro nini takaro. Just wake up, you will succeed. Namibia, 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 give me your attention. Namibia, Namibia, give me your attention. Namibia, Namibia. Give me your attention, Zikulongwe Loriality. Kapelonjiro, Fubike Sintano. Kapelonjiro, Fubike Sintano.
Give me your attention, Namibia, Namibia.
Alright, so it's 6 minutes past the hour of 12 o'clock and we are talking about polygamy and whether it's a cultural thing or whether it is a cultural customary law or customary ethic or morality or it's a norm. It's a cultural norm. And I think we would be safe to say it's a cultural norm, but it's not traditionally legally binding. It's not traditionally legally binding. It's something that was not morally correct, but it's something that, because it does not harm society. When somebody marries two wives, how does it affect your house? If you are neighboring that person, it doesn't affect you in any way. So, and this is somebody's individual choice to do that. It is not bound by the laws of tradition, or it's not governed by the laws of tradition, but it is governed by the laws of individual choice. If somebody feels he wants to marry two wives, and now there is a problem because there is a twist to it. If a woman feels that she wants to be married by two men, will she be allowed? If a woman now decides she wants to be married by three men, will she be allowed? Well, there will be a problem though. Because a car, the driver's seat is only one in a car. So it only takes one person at a time. The car cannot be driven by four people at the same time. And in fact, even mechanically, when you are fixing a car, you only need one mechanic. That is, you know, one auto mechanic for the car to be fixed properly. Because many hands, there'll be confusion. So many people argue to say, no, a woman is not really, it's not made for that. She can't be shared by men like that. Because a man's need for a woman is higher to a certain extent than a woman's need for a man. Now when we talk about, you know, sexually, according to some research, a man thinks about sex 1,000 times in an hour. And sex to a man is priority number one. But to a woman, it could be priority number 10. So the gap between that is the one that will make it very difficult for a woman to be married by four men. So polyandry, maybe where it is done in societies, where it is done, they have a way they do it. But polyandry will, I don't think it's a successful methodology. Because wherever you go, whether it is in America, wherever they fight for women, if somebody finds you with their woman and you are dancing with her, it will cause problem. You might lose your teeth. Or jaws will be broken. And that's normal for human beings. For men, it's normal. We are not talking about rights here now. We are now talking about, you know, reality. So polyandry will not work. It might work, but if a woman feels that she wants to be married by two men, if polygamy is to be legalized, maybe we might think about legalizing polyandry. So now let's get into the implications of polygamy that people don't talk about. You see, polygamy was created for men's sexual pleasure, nothing else. It was not created to solve economic problem. It was also not made to solve demographic imbalance. No. Even if you have everyone marrying two wives, that will not solve the demographic imbalance that the world is going through. Because the demographic imbalance that the world is going through is caused by something else. It has nothing to do with one wife issue. So the demographic imbalance that we'll talk about is not caused by lack of polygamy, or is not caused by monogamy. And in fact, if there are women listening, who among you want to be married by two, who among you want to get married, want to get into marriage, the two of you, you are sharing a husband. One of you will start complaining that they are not getting attention or there is some discrimination. Now, we only have one central government in Windhoek. And you hear the Kavangos are complaining, no, we are not regarded as the second most, you know, populous tribe. We are being treated like we are the last, when we are also, you know, the second majority group. You know, people here in the South will complain to say, no, development is just going to the North and not in the South. People in the South don't have, you know, employment. It's only Vambos that are taking over, that are taking position in, you know. And people in Zambezi are complaining. Same thing, but we only have one central government. Does that mean we need to have 14 governments? No. Because even if we have 14 governments, that will not solve the problem. Because that what people are talking about has nothing to do with one government system. It has to do with the way service delivery is conducted. You know, the way service delivery process is conducted. Right. Now, one of my uncles married four wives. My father had two, plus two women that, you know, my brother was born and my sister was born outside also. And then the first marriage, that's where I was born. Second marriage, it's my three sisters. And all these marriages, that all these two marriages have certificates from the traditional authority. They give you a certificate. Everybody has their own certificate as witness that you are not staying together. So it's a legal issue because there was lobola on both sides. And when my father died, all these two, my mother and my stepmother, are getting widow's pension up to now. You know, they are getting widow's pension. There is an issue that, you know, most children that are born in this setup, they are likely not, the likelihood of them not working together is very high. That's an implication of, you know, polygamy. The implication of polygamy in fact, in an Oshiwambo traditional settings, it is even worse. For the reasons that I'm going to qualify as we go. The implications of, you know, polygamy is this. And it is done without being said. And most of us that are pro-polygamist or pro-polygamy will not even talk about it. But it's there, it exists. Now, In a polygamous setup, there are four things that are like, there are two major things that are likely to happen. One, which is very major. And in fact, this one factor, this is what will determine whether, you as a man are in control or not. And the reason why women of those days don't used to speak up is because you will be beaten. Because in our traditional setup, we had the fact of disciplining women, which is today deemed as domestic violence. So in most polygamous relationships, you don't speak up because you will be beaten, depending on what you are saying. One day I was sitting next to one of my aunt, and she was talking about how she was beaten. Well, as a boy, I was laughing because I didn't understand the impact of what she was talking about. One major factor is you will always be the cool room between these two women, because these two women are factions. These two women are factions. They will never be friends. That does not exist in a polygamous, relationship. That if you corner most women that are in there, you corner them, you will discover what I'm talking about. I saw it from my uncle's wives, that they could even walk together, they are following each other, but I could always see the tense environment around them. I don't know how I discovered that as a child, but I something was just not working. But, you know, publicly they will pretend as if they are together. Now let me give you an example of you know, let me give you an example of SWAPO or IPC. If I get into IPC now and I say IPC 1 within IPC, will I be allowed? Because in fact I'm directly competing with Dr. Itula, who is the leader of IPC, with the president of IPC legally. Or I come up with SWAPO C or SWAPO A within SWAPO. Will I be allowed? Because I'm competing with the President Netumbo, who is the elected SWAPO president. I will not be allowed. And if I will be allowed, there will be tension that will break that party apart. There are things, you know, that can be shared unless you are a very powerful man that you get really to be in control. But men will not be in control when it comes to this. I'm giving another practical example. Even God himself, who is all-powerful, almighty, he did not allow Satan to be in heaven. Because Satan wanted to just come up with a different viewpoint that will not allow God to be the ultimate decision maker. There was supposed to be somebody to challenge certain decisions so that they are balanced, you know, according to how Satan was thinking. But God said, no, we cannot share power. There is only one Almighty. There cannot be two Almighties. Out. So there are things when we talk from practical reality that, you know, there are things that cannot be shared. That when they are shared, it will bring chaos. If you really want to know whether these people were together or not, let the father in that house, let the man in that house die. That's when you will know. That's when the house of cards will fall apart. So, from a practical point of view, polygamy to me is a house of cards. At least from what I've seen from my uncle and what I've seen from my father. It's a house of cards. It will only take the death of the men in that house for you to be able to see that there was never unity here. Because, you see, we say, you know, animals. The reason why it is possible for the whole kraal to be filled with heifers and only two or three bulls is because the animal is not governed by morality like we are governed by morality. That's why there is no rape in animals. You know, not all the time that female animals will want to mate. But male animals want to mate all the time because their sex drive is very high. So, Namibian, you know, renowned activists, human rights activists, go into a Tesha National Park and investigate, you know, baboons. If the Ministry of Gender has to go into, because we are comparing ourselves with animals, the Ministry of Gender should go into a Tosha and see how lions, how male lions mate with their female. They will come back with multiple rape cases. In fact, it's multiple rape and murder cases. Because in a lion, in a male lion, instinct, you know, when female lions, when lioness have cubs, they don't want to mate anymore. Because they look at their cubs as fulfillment. There's no reason for mating anymore. But a male animal want to mate so that it releases out semen. Because it's this bioaccumulation of semen that is problematic to it. Want to get it out. So, for a female lion, mating was just for procreation. But for a male lion, it is beyond that. So, now, let's say the female lions don't want anymore to mate. What would happen? A group of male lions will come into the den, kill all the cubs. That is what will bring the female lions to their knees. And that is rape and murder at the same time, if the Ministry of Gender has to investigate that. But under what law do you go and investigate lions killing cubs and mating by force with female lions? They are not governed by morality. The reason why we have law and order, or the reason why we have order, is because there is law that brings order or that maintains order. And the reason why we have law is because we have morality from which we derive the law. And the reason why we have morality is because we have conscience from which we derive morality, from whom we drive law, which brings or which maintains order. But animals are not governed by conscience. That's why they can never regret what they have done. Now, if you are talking about human rights in a Tosha National Park, it does not apply. Because if you are talking about human rights, a lion looks at a giraffe as a big lunch. And the giraffe looks at a lion as a big threat. So any mistake, the giraffe will become lunch. Or any mistake or any miscalculation, the lion will be kicked once in the head and sent into the bosom of its ancestors immediately. So, if you say a lion has right to eat, it is its right to eat, which is true. A giraffe also has right to defend itself, because it is its right to live. Now, to avoid chaos, biology has decided the forest life, jungle life, is a survival of the fittest. Or survive of the wisest. If you are weak, you know that you are on the menu. Because if a bunch of hyenas find a weak lion, they will surround it and turn it into lunch. And that's why even dogs, If you have a dog in your house and you live alone and you die there and no one will come and no one has noticed and to come and get you, they will find that your dog feeding on you. Because a dog does not have conscience to say, no, this is my master. He's dead. A dog does not have that conscience. In fact, when you are starting to disintegrate, the smell that will come from there, it to us as human being is a bad stench. But to a dog, it will start salivating. Because it is not governed by conscience. So we can't compare ourselves with animals. Not at all. Because they are bulls. We are not bulls. We are men and women. So we have a certain morality that is governing us. That is governing our society. Now, I'm not saying polygamy should not be there. No, that's your choice. You know, it's an individual choice to make. I'm just giving you the realities, what comes with it, so that you, when you are embarking on it, you know. Because most of the time, we only talk about the good, and we don't talk about the bad side of things. So, there will be bigger competition between these women. They are competing for who? They are competing for one man who is supposed to be their husband, who is supposed to love them equally. But can you love two people equally? That is not possible. There is only one person that you will love and appreciate the most. And there's the other one that you will despise. Now, practically, as parents, you don't love your children the same. Some of us know that we were never our parents' favorite. We know. So we know that we were not our parents' favorite. Like, my father would make decisions without even telling me. But am I not supposed to be one of his major sons, one of his elder sons? But he will make decisions without telling me. I'll only come and hear that there is this decision made. So, I've always been an island. And I understood that very well. And in fact, that's what helped me to be self-reliant and self-dependent. So, if you as parents have children that are favorite, that are your favorite to the point that when they do wrong, you don't even, whatever they do is okay with it because you favor them. You want to keep shouting at us who are not your favorite sons. Well, how much more when you are married to two women? The children of one will be favored by you because you love her. And the children of one will be second class. You will be forced to equalize. But there are instances where, in circumstances where it will be clear that you don't like these children. You love this. So there was a time when my father used to make it clear that among his wives, there is his favorite. There are times when, my father used to make it clear, and my uncle as well. And this creates war. At the same time, it also creates a psychological trauma to both women in their children, especially the women who are not, who feel that they are not loved, the competition will be very high. And it seems that the standard will be very high to the less favored. And the standard will be very low to the most favored. This is polygamy. I'm not making things up. I'm talking about a life I was born in. So even if you hear that somebody was born in polygamy, I would acknowledge that the experiences will be different depending on, you know, households. But there will be one thing in common. There will be one thing in common. That if, you know, if you could really see that, okay, if my mother could not stand here to try, I would not have completed school. You see, I can write a book when it comes to my experience of all this thing, of all this polygamy thing. I can write a book. And I'm not even speaking from an emotional point of view. I have nothing to, you know, I have nothing emotional about it. I'm just giving you the reality. So that is factor number one. Factor number one, you are raising competition between your children and your wives. They are competing for whom? They are competing for you. Okay, let me now draw you to a practical political example. Let's say presidency is a man. You know, Namibian presidency. Everybody wants to be a president. Okay, let me say government. Everybody wants to take over government. SWAPO, PDM, SWANU, IPC, AR, UDP, I mean, not UDP, but NDP for Mr. Lukato. United Democratic Front, NUDO, and Kawandenge's new party now. You know, CDV of Mr. Kandume there. And the Body of Christ Party of Mr. Festus Thomas. Let me also bring in Ari Angula, Rosa Namises, because they also wanted to stand and become, president. LPM for Bernardo Swartboy. Of course, COD for Mr. Vaino. Is it Vaino? Yeah. And then RDP. And some of the parties, I don't even know their name, because the empowerment fighting against corruption or fighting corruption for Mr. Kennedy Longa. Let me say they are all those are wives of one person called government. My friend, the environment when those wives are gathered together is very tense and very toxic. Very tense, very poisonous, very toxic, and very dangerous. Because at any time, there could be a fight between one or two or more. You people, didn't you have Team SWAPO and Team Harambee 2017? So where are the Team SWAPO people? They were thrown into a political dumping site. That's a consequence of competing for attention. I'm just giving you an example now. you can say, okay, let's unite together. We fight against Munyalombe, which is SWAPO, because SWAPO is Munyalombe. Totende is IPC, Okehaka is AR, because they got at least a higher, you see? Now, okay, Okehaka and Totende and others will unite to say, okay, we are fighting against Munyalombe because she is corrupt. But even in their unity, they're still toxic. Even in their gathering, any mistake, they will also start fighting. Why? Because they are fighting for attention. They are competing for one man. I'm giving you an example of City of Windhoek. The so-called Progressive Party died because they were competing for one man. So, and that is what happens in a polygamous setup. There is so much fire in there. To the point that as a child, to a certain extent myself, I felt that it was not, I wished I was never born. You know, and I could imagine how my brother and my other sister, you know, felt. Because them, their mothers were not with us. Their mothers were father. They were brought in to be raised. So my sister was raised by my stepmother, and my brother was raised by my mother. But there were instances where I could feel my mother make it clear that I'm not your mother to my brother. This thing of saying we were raised as like one person from our mother, it's not true. It's not true. You know, there was a time I felt that my mother is pretending. She's not genuine in what she's doing. I felt that as a child. Okay, there were times when she would really be genuine, you know, to my brother. And that's what made my brother to be, you know, when my father died, there was a policy that was in his name. And I came to understand him when he decided to share with no one. I came to understand my sister and my brother when they decided that they were going to take everything and not to share with anyone. Because I don't understand the level of trauma, the amount of trauma that they could have been going through. So that's why, in as much as now I was left in between, I was trying to reconcile everyone. Because when my father died, I was already on my own. So I had really nothing to really hope for, taking anything from him. I mean, you know, despite all that, I respected my father and honored him as God. That's how I looked at him. If he speaks something, I take it serious. My father died, he found me on my own. I was already on my own. I was already hustling on my own. Whatever I was doing was not enough, but it was, I mean, what it was not, how can I say? I was not a rich person, but I was content with the little that I was getting in my own hustles. So because my brother decided he's not going to share anything with anyone. And to a certain extent, I understood him. I really understood him to a certain extent. So, the fire that is going on between IPC and SWAPO, compare it to the fire that should go on between two women married by one man. Well, IPC can say Namibia is all we have is ours all. That's just a statement. But what is between SWAPO and IPC is hydrochloric acid. It's very corrosive. It's not only SWAPO and IPC, SWAPO and PDM, SWAPO and, you see, IPC and LPM. Inasmuch as they took the ECN to court, does not mean they were united and like they were of one heart. No. Because LPM could as well just say, okay, we are giving up. We want to give up our old thing. We are now joining IPC, because we want to help IPC win. No one will do that. No one from the opposition will do that. Because why? They are all competing for one man. And for each to win, they think that the more toxic the environment between them becomes, the higher the chances for them to win. That's a mentality that's not even governed by conscience. It's governed by situation. So if you think polygamy, it's an easy road to take. You don't know what you are about to get into. It's not an easy road as people present, because beyond the sexual pleasure that a man gets, there is also, now this is what will take me to the second factor, second most dangerous factors of, you know, of polygamy. And most people that are pro polygamy don't talk about this, because most of them have never lived in polygamy. Or they've lived in, but they are in denial of reality. One of the two. Now, the purpose for our programs is to awaken knowledge. It's not really to instigate sensationalism. That's not our mandate. Our mandate is to, we bring the school near you. We become like a university where you are taught to understand practicality of life. This is a main aim and mandate of the program Realm of the Historics, and so is other programs on Eagle FM. We are not alarmist, and we are not sensationalists. Even in our reporting, we don't say what you did not say. We caught you verbatim. We don't create stories from nowhere. We make stories out of stories. Now, the second most dangerous thing where the life of a human, of a man falls and rises on, is this one. You see, as a man, you are supposed to be a provider. Now you have double responsibility. And we are no longer living in a world of, you know, crop farming and cattle alone. We are now living in a world of money. And money seems to have taken over now. As long as you have money, things will be fine, because you can afford. This is what shortened my father's life. You know, on average, men go through stress because society expects a lot from men. Society has put too much on a man. And men's responsibility is very big. The responsibility of a man is very big. And I think I might continue with this topic by next Sunday. Because there are many factors we need to look at. You know, you can have, a man is expected to provide. And everybody's looking at you because you are a man. And that will grow tall on a man. In my father's case, my father had cattle and two wives. And the salary was divided into two. My mother gets the share. And my stepmother gets his share, her share. And the little that is left for my father, he still need to maintain his dream, his estate of cattle. Whether cattle when they are sick, it is on him. When, you know, the payment of the cattle header was on him. And at the same time, my father was also raising children from his children of his brother's children. When they came to, you know, to find school, they were on my father. And that was huge. You know, that was a very huge responsibility. And sometimes my father and my mother will fight. You don't care about your children. You don't. Then I was like, what more can this guy do? You know, how much deeper can he go? When he comes with bread, he's supposed to buy, if he's buying four bread for the house there, he must also buy four bread there. Everything must be equal. And it was said to be, some people said, wow, this is a good governing, but it was eating on my father. You know, it was eating on him. When it comes to university of when it came to university now, paying university, that's when I started to feel like, you know, and you see, this is what affected my school. This is what affected my study. Because the environment in the house became very toxic to the point that I could feel it while I was in GT. Now, from my village to GT is 1,150 kilometers. But I could feel the tense. And that is what affected my school. Because I was always worried that I would just hear that the house has broken apart. And of course my father had started to have high blood pressure and all those complications and he succumbed to it. And you see, my daily life, I regret losing the man called my father. In my daily life. So, in this society that we live in today, next Sunday we are coming to talk about how polygamy will be difficult in the society that we live today. And I'm going to use my father as an example. I'm going to use my father as an example. You know, my uncle had one wife. And this might be my thinking, I could be wrong. But my uncle is still alive now. He's even heading, you know, to 80. He's still alive. So, to a certain extent, my mother felt like she was not liked by my father. And my father only liked my stepmother, and we felt that my father, it was mess. It was a mess. Really, it was a mess. And partly I would think, I would even say that we might have contributed to his complications. So when I'm talking like this, I'm not provoking any emotions. I don't want you to, I want to provoke, you know, how can I say? I want to be practical. I want to speak what is reality. That the cons of polygamy are not spoken. Because most of us feel that polygamy is our culture and we must be allowed to practice it. In fact, nobody's preventing you from practicing polygamy. You yourself know that you cannot afford. Even the wife that you have now, you are struggling to keep them on par. Get a second person now and have children with her. Then you will know what I'm talking about. So if you are defending polygamy, you need to understand the implications that come with it. And if you are talking against polygamy, you at least you need to have the experience. You don't just talk against something just because you don't like it. Or you don't just defend something just because you like it. Both the anti and pro should understand the implications of their position. And that must be practically real. You know, there was a time when I brought in Rosa Namises here and I was talking about abortion, and I said, if you have a joint account with somebody, you don't have a right to withdraw the whole money. No, Rosa said, no, it's my money, I withdraw it. And so it says, okay, fine. So I told Rosa, I said, okay, fine, Rosa, bring my 23 chromosome that I contributed, because for a child to be made, there are 46 chromosomes, 23 from me, 23 from you. So bring back my chromosomes, then you can do what you want with your remaining 23, because they are yours anyway. So that was the end of our conversation. So we need to be as real as we can. If human rights was presented us from a reality, we wouldn't have the social decay that we have today, because we would have used our realities to define what a right should be. All right. Our time has fast run out, but I'm going to continue with part two of this, the pros and cons of polygamy. And we have stood on factor number two. And factor number two is what brought the complications. I started to hear that my father has BP. That's when I started to realize, oh. You know, and I could see how my brother used to behave. And now I understand that it was trauma that he went through as a child. From me, Eagle FM's only most advanced, self-propelled bazooka artillery and the most reliable kinetic energy in town. I say goodbye to you. We are going to meet again next Sunday.